Good morning. I'm State Representative Dave Pinto. I'm the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division, and I call this meeting of the division to order. I want to welcome our members and staff, as well as members of the public who are joining us via the House website, Facebook Live, or YouTube. This hearing is being conducted, as our other virtual hearings have been, pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for remote committee hearings. And I do want to provide just a couple of reminders with this different format than we would use in our regular session. That in order to preserve sound quality, it's going to be important for people who are not speaking to keep their microphones muted. And for quite a bit of the meeting, when there's presentations happening, including now, staff are going to be muting the microphones of everyone who's not speaking. And at other points, we'll be unmuting folks, but I'll ask people who are not speaking to please keep your microphones muted, except for when you're going to be speaking, in order to keep our audio legible. To confirm, committee discussion and questions will continue to go through the chair, and members can request recognition by just pressing the raise hand feature on the app, or you can raise your hand by pressing *9. If you're having any trouble with this, please contact our committee staff, Alyssa Fritz or Polly Cervenek. Reminder that members have received a packet of meeting materials via email, and members of the public, those are posted to our committee website. And then if other members of the public, if members of the public do want to wish to submit a written comment or question, you can email it to our committee administrator, Alyssa Fritz, and that's alyssa.fritz@house.mn. 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 I'll figure that members will raise their hand with questions at any point. But what we'll do is start as usual with the roll call. And members ask, we're going to have your microphones be unmuted, but again, I keep mute except when you're talking. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Katiza Watoon, Vice Chair.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Heintzman. Representative Heintzman.
Yep, I'm here. Representative. I'm double booked with another committee this morning, sorry.
Oh, no.
So, I couldn't be between both of them.
Representative Morrison.
Present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Wasilek.
Present.
Representative West.
Okay, a quorum is present, and so our next order of business is to adopt the minutes from our most recent meeting. A reminder that a copy of the minutes is in our virtual meeting packet. I have a motion to approve the minutes from Thursday, April 16th. See if I've got, we'll have our Vice Chair, Representative Katiza Watoon, do that if she's willing.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. So any additions or corrections to the minutes from any members? And so hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes, you'll need to unmute yourself, of course, say aye.
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 And anyone aye. Opposed? Okay, so the motion passes and the minutes are adopted. We're going to be remuting the microphones, but again, members just press the raise hand feature, reach out in any other way if you want to be recognized. We will, so our first bill that's up is House File 3954, a bill from Representative Cagle, who is here. You'll recall we had a full hearing on this bill during our March 12th meeting, and so no further testimony is going to be taken on it, though again, Representative Cagle is here. We'll ask her just to give a quick summary for bill. Maybe I'll ask our Vice Chair, Representative Katiza Watoon, as well to move to re-refer House File 3954 to the Education Finance Division. If she's willing.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cagle, if you can just remind us, and again, we heard this bill kind of at our last regular hearing, but just remind us of the content of it.
Sure. So good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. House File 3954 would be $4.5 million to help Head Start organizations to serve families with young children prenatal to age 5. And this would change a hold harmless date so that the programs would see no less funding based on their 2020 state level funding rather than the 1993. So, you know, we all know how important Head Start programs are. Head Start provides school readiness services to children ages birth to five from low-income families to support their growth and development. Services include early learning, health development, family well-being, and those programs are based off the needs of the community. So yeah, you know, Head Start already has too many families that are eligible on the waiting list. And so we're currently serving less than half of the preschool age kids and under 10% of infants and toddlers who are eligible for this program. And these are the most at-risk kids who need the comprehensive Head Start services the most.
And Representative Cagle, maybe you could just clarify that this is that these programs have experienced this would be to make up a shortfall that's because of a shift in federal funding that then caused a number of programs. So this would basically bring programs to the level that where they were previously at in terms of their state funding. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. So that's the hold harmless piece based on the 2020 state funding levels rather than 1993 to make up that shortfall.
Okay, thank you. And then members, obviously our fiscal picture has changed significantly since when we heard the bill on March 12th. And so I just want to clarify that what's going on here is our committee had passed other bills out, in most specifically House File 1, that are in the process of other committees. We're going to be getting a revised budget forecast, et cetera. And so we're going to have to see what the situation is. The concern is that because we have so few both committee hearings and floor sessions, that in order for any piece of any fiscal bill to really be able to move anywhere, we have to get the bills moving at this point now in session. So, for example, our next floor session, if we're having a floor session every week and a half, if we wait to move on a bill like this till some later date, then there's not time to get it to education and finance and then potentially to ways and means, et cetera. So what this does is this puts this bill, this moves this bill along in the same path. So I want to make sure just the members are clear this is this first step in being able to take any action in any way on any bills. But of course, we as a body are going to need to be looking at our fiscal picture. But the concern is if we don't act now, then we won't have any option to do anything with a bill like this. So hopefully that makes some sense. I expect there may be questions or discussion. And so if there is, if members can please indicate. And I believe we can unmute folks at this time for that. So any members who wish to be recognized? Perhaps there won't be. I see Representative Franson is waving her hand. We'll do it that way. Representative Franson.
Sorry, I'm still trying to figure things out, okay? It's still too early. My coffee is still brewing. Okay,
we're with you. We're with you, Representative Franson. Too early. We're with you.
Oh, what a life. So anyway, I love Head Start. Won't go into the belabor the details on that. Do you have an idea when we will see a budget target at all? Do you have a sense?
I Representative Franson, I really don't. There is going to be, my understanding is that a revised budget forecast has been requested. And so presumably nothing could come till after that.
Yeah.
But obviously we're in a very, it's a very tight fiscal picture. That's certainly true.
Okay, that's it.
All right, thank you. Yeah, Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jumping back and forth between this and the LCCMR, like I mentioned earlier, but I do have a question for Representative Cagle. I'm looking at the cost of this, and I'm not saying that I'm opposed to it, but I am wondering, do we expect this money to be there going forward? I'm not even sure that this committee has been given a target. Maybe the chair could address that.
I can maybe I'll just note before Representative Cagle answers that we have not been given a target. And again, this is a somewhat unusual circumstance in that because we have so few floor sessions and then so few committee hearings as well, and because our committee reports up to two other committees, Education Finance and HHS Finance, we kind of have to move anything out of our committee that would spend anything just to get it going on the path. So so it's an unusual situation that, but no, we do not have a target at this point. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Heintzman, this is just to fill that funding gap. And so the what we were trying to do at the beginning was to fix the formula so that we wouldn't have to continually come back to fill this gap. And so this this bill is just to fill the gap, and then we're hoping going forward that we can make this formula so that we don't have these funding gaps.
I'll also just a reminder, Representative Heitzen, that we actually didn't have an explicit target last year, you know, a public target, that our two parent committees got targets. And so I would expect that assuming targets are issued, that they would go to those committees. And so this bill would go to Education and Finance, and which I think, and three of our members are on that. But Representative Heitzen, anything else?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some follow-up. So I see the total cost, or I should say the bill provides an additional $4.5 million to fill that gap that Representative Cagle, you're talking about. And I'm hearing estimates going into 2021 that we could be looking at between $5 and $10 billion deficits. And there could be cuts, massive cuts throughout agencies. And I'm not saying that we should ignore some gaps is what you're trying to fill. But at the same time, we shouldn't be also ignoring the fact that we could be looking at some huge cuts system-wide. So it just seems sort of odd that we're continuing to spend more money when we know we're likely to be facing a significant hardship. So I guess I'm just wondering what Representative Cagle, what your thought process is, knowing that we have likely deficits ahead of us.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think this program is one that has a really high return on it. It's a good investment for our state. And so in the kids that need the services the most, invested in early childhood education are very and so
Representative Cagle, we're having Representative Cagle, you're cutting in and out, at least for me. And I can see some nodding from other folks as well. Let's see. Can we try hearing from you again? Let's see if the connection's any better. I know you'd said earlier that you thought the connection was bad.
So you know, this right now better?
Better. Yeah. Okay. It is.
So Head Start's one of those programs that serves the most neediest people, the most neediest kids and families. And it's just one of those programs that, you know, there's such a high rate of return on it. And the problem that we're facing right now is that there's too many families that are eligible that are on the waiting list. And so we want to make sure that we're serving those families. I understand that we're probably going into tough times, but I think, you know, this is one of those programs that really makes sense to invest in and make sure that we can get our kids served.
And Representative Eisman, again, I'd probably note that, you know, it may well be, and I suspect it probably would be, that in the end, if there were funding that would go to this, there's a number of policy options that would be, you know, less than the 4.5 million. Again, what's a little bit tough right now is we're flying blind. We're going to be getting the revised forecast, et cetera. But we need to at least get this kind of on the conveyor belt to even have an option later on. But I definitely take to heart what you have to say. Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think it would be prudent, just like in any other part of Minnesota's economy, to be looking at where we can find savings as opposed to where we can spend more money. And I get it, but at the same time, this is probably an opportunity to be looking inside of the programs and saying, where can we find cost savings as opposed to, like I just said, find places to spend more money. Maybe there's solutions inside the program, efficiencies that could be found. And those are some of the ideas I think that should be coming to the surface at a time when we absolutely know we're going to be facing hardship going forward economically, and especially in state government, there's going to be challenges for us as legislators. So I hope going forward, Mr. Chair, that we're looking at legislation that's driving towards that, because that is the elephant in the room every time we're discussing increase in spending. And so I have to talk about it briefly, and I appreciate you letting me do that.
No, thank you, Representative Heisman. And I'm sure regarding savings and other things, Representative Cagle will be interested, I'm sure, to continue talking with you. And again, let's keep an eye on this. And it is a somewhat unusual situation because of kind of our inability to meet as frequently as we would like, certainly on the floor, et cetera. So good. Representative Katiza Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that Representative Heintzman has brought up some good points about just making sure that our programs are running as efficiently and as effectively as possible all the time. But as we note, we're in the midst of these uncharted waters, global pandemic, and it's not the service yet again.
You were kind of cutting in and out as well. I don't know what it is. It seems to be spreading.
Sorry about that. So
that's okay. Try it again, Representative Katiza Witun.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I can.
I wanted to piggyback off of Representative Heintzman's point that we always want to make sure that our programs are running as efficiently and as effectively as possible. But while we're in the midst of these uncharted waters of a global pandemic, it's brought to the surface yet again that childcare is indeed the backbone of our economy. And so we want to make sure that we're supporting Minnesota's most families that are most in need when they need it the most, which is right now.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Witun. So any further discussions or questions from members? Representative Bonner, looks like you wanted to say, wasn't sure. Okay. And I should note too that there may be some federal funding as well that may be coming that could that we could take advantage of. So again, this is a bit unusual. We're getting this going on the path. So not seeing any further questions or discussions, Representative Cagle will give you the last word as usual if you want it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to thank you guys for letting me share this bill again in the committee. Head Start is an amazing program. As I shared before, I worked at an organization that administered Head Start programming, and it's, no matter how hard of a day it is or how bad of a mood you are in, when there's a whole line of three-year-olds walking by giving you high fives, or at least used to be giving you high fives, it really brightens up your day. And so this program is just amazing, and I thank you again for hearing the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Cagle. So with that, Representative Katiza Witun renews her motion that House File 3954 be referred to the Education Finance Division. As we did with the minutes, we'll simply take the vote. Members, if you can unmute yourself, all in favor of the motion to re-refer to the Education Finance Division, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. With that, the motion prevails, and House File 3954 is recommended for re-referral to Education Finance. Representative Cagle, thank you so much for joining us. And then with that, I'm passing the gavel to Representative Katiza Witun for House File 4374.
Thank you. Have a good meeting.
Oh, thanks. Take care.
Bye. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next item on the agenda is House File 4374. Chair Pinto, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House File 4374 be referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division.
House File 4374 is now before the committee. Chair Pinto, please present your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And members, so we've, of course, heard a lot of testimony over the last really year and a half about the need for increased public support for early care and learning. We know that this was a sector that was in crisis even before the pandemic, and it's obviously an even deeper crisis now. And in particular, I direct the attention of members of the public to the hearing we had just last Thursday and what a dire situation we're in when it comes to early care and learning, which of course then underpins all the other aspects of society. And we've made the case for House File 1, and we've had a number of bills going through. What's before us right now is something we've talked about over time as well, which is that there is currently a requirement from the federal government regarding the rates at which our child care providers are reimbursed through a child care assistance program. And there's a standard that's set, and it's a pretty low standard, and yet our state is paying a rate that is even below that very low standard. We've talked about this a bit before, but I want to make sure that we're really clear on this, that that there's a survey that's done of providers every 3 years. And rates are set based on looking at the percentile, the kind of how far down in the survey the rates are going to be. And so the federal government requirement is simply you go down to the 25th percentile, 75% down that list, and then pay rates based on that survey. Our state pays based on the 2011 survey, so it's nearly 10 years out of date. And so what this bill does is to simply raise our rates to be in compliance with federal law, to have it be the 25th percentile of the current year rates. Again, with everything else we've heard in the last year and a half, it seems like this should be the bare minimum of what we would do, and we need to do it. And I also want to point out that there is $65 in federal funding that is available to, in fact, pay for this, that is sitting in the bank, being unused by our families and by providers that pays for this, and that there's a federal penalty that will be imposed if we do not pursue this as well. And so it seems to me that this is a no-brainer that we should, at the very least, take this step. It's absolutely critical that we do so this session. Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Berg from House Fiscal Staff just to make sure we're all clear about the fiscal aspects of this bill, if you're willing to bring him on.
Very well. Go right ahead, Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair and members, I think to start, I'll just make a couple comments relative to the money that the Representative Pinto was referring to from the federal government. As members know, we get a child care development block grant on an annual basis, which in recent years has been somewhat larger than the base that we have been used to. The last three federal fiscal years, they have increased that amount. There is not an assumption in the state budget that that increase goes forward, but it has provided us with some additional funding, which the state has in hand at this point to cover child care rates. Also, as part of the current pandemic, the state has received $48.1 million in COVID community child care development block grant money, some of which is already allocated for the governor's executive order, Executive Order 20-12, which does a variety of things and in suspends redeterminations in a variety of programs that has a cost in child care and some other things. So about $2.5 million of the new money we got for the COVID has already been allocated, and that number could change. But altogether, going into any change we might make for fiscal 21, the state currently has about $111 million of federal money to apply towards the child care program, the two child care programs. And we have, generally speaking, 3 years to expend those federal dollars. So then moving to the sheet that I believe the committee administrator sent out to you late last evening, that is a single page sheet that says child care rate proposal funding at the top and has the tracking for this specific proposal that Representative Pinto is got in House File 4374. This proposal moves to the federally mandated minimum that Representative Pinto was referring to, the 25th percentile of the most recent survey, which is the 2018 survey for 2020 and 21 and 22, and then would move to the 21 survey, I believe, for fiscal 22, and for 23, it would move to the 21 survey. just an aside, some people may have seen, I did send out a proposal. The governor had a proposal in his original budget at 30%. I did send out a sheet that compared those two, but because they're not quite apples to apples comparison, it just seemed simpler to just focus on only the proposal that's in front of us. And so that is what's on the sheet that was sent out yesterday evening. And just looking at line one, which is the summary line of the cost of this, you'll see that due to the federal funds in hand, we estimate, and again, I'll caution that the amount of money we got on the COVID money could get spent on some other things. And so the amount covered by federal CCDBG funds could change over time. But at this point in time, it would the federal funds would cover essentially all of the costs in fiscal years 21, 22, or 21 and 22, except for, you see, there's 53,000 in each of those years. Those are for system modifications at DHS for the computer systems. Can't spend CCDBG funds on those purposes. So we have to pay for the state share of the systems changes through the general fund. The feds also pay a share of that separately. So there, the total cost would be $53,000 to the general fund in 21 and $53,000 to the general fund in 22. And then you see in the tails by which time we've expended all of the available extra community child care development block grant funds, and the cost pops up to a $17.5 million general fund cost in this display. One other thing I will note on here is you'll see on line three that there's a line for TANF funding. TANF funds do get expended in this program, but this program at this point, and the governors did not assume any additional TANF spending. There is a balance in the TANF account in 2023, and that's a discussion we could have as well. But overall, this proposal is paid for almost entirely by federal funding until fiscal 23, at which point $17.5 million comes from either the general fund or other source that we would identify. Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, rather.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, and I want to make sure just to sort of clarify, so members of the public, it's the document on our website that says HF4374 House Fiscal Spreadsheet. And as Mr. Berg said, and for members, it's almost entirely paid for the next couple of years. There's a $53,000 cost. And then the $17.4 million cost in 2023. I guess if Mr. Berg can just clarify that there's some decent chance, I don't want to I don't know that we could quantify, but there's some decent chance that even that $17.4 million cost ends up being covered by federal funds in 2023. If Mr. Berg can just clarify that.
Yes, Madam Chair. I guess something I neglected to mention is that, or I touched on at the beginning but didn't elaborate on, is that we have, as I stated, as a state, gotten an additional amount of money in the Child Care Development Block Grant in the last three federal fiscal years, federal fiscals 18, 19, and 20. There is not at this point any assumption in the state budget that extra funding would continue. However, if it did, if you assume that the 3 years that have happened are the new normal on that, then there would be an additional roughly $30 million potentially a year in fiscal years 21 and beyond, which obviously would be enough to cover that $17 million in the tails. But at this point, we don't have any assumption that we'll get that money until the feds actually pass it. And I would also caution the state budget is in a great deal of uncertainty. The federal budget also is in a great deal of uncertainty.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Berg. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just, as I'm understanding this and the importance of it, it seems like we're working on three different levels. That the first level is saying that there's very reasonable assumptions that we can make that doing what we're doing actually might essentially be no additional cost to the state. or a very possibly the 53,000. So that's you know, point number one, if I'm understanding it correctly. Point number two is that there could actually be a penalty, and it could be a cost if we don't take this action. And then the third point, as I'm understanding, is essentially we're talking about the integrity of our system, that we accept money from the federal government, and they say this is the conditions that we want to give you how it should be spent, and that we're violating that. So I have to be strongly supportive if I'm understanding this correctly. So thank you, Madam Chair, and if the bill's author could address and see if I have understood it correctly.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Chair Pinto, any clarifications?
Yeah, I think, Representative Pryor, you definitely have laid it out correctly, and I want to make sure to note that the CCDBG money that we're talking about, this federal funding, has never gone down in its 30-year history. In terms of even thinking about what happens in 2023, if that funding stays the same, then in fact, it's even covered in 2023. But I think you've put it so well in terms of the integrity of the program. We're receiving this federal funding. They set a requirement. But let's remind ourselves that even if they didn't have the requirement is simply to pay our providers slightly less badly than we do right now. Right now, the rate is set at the 25th percentile of a nearly 10-year-old rate. All this is requiring is we pay them at the 25th percentile of the current market survey. Even if there weren't the federal requirement, just for the integrity of our own sense of supporting families and children and providers, we should be making this move for that reason alone. But yes, we also face a federal penalty if we don't. And there is, as Mr. Berg said, more than $100 million available, not only available for this change, but not available for anything else. At least we've got the $65 million that's been sitting there in the bank. So for all those reasons, absolutely, we should make this change.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, any further questions? Representative Franzen, did I see you had raised your hand earlier? I want to make sure that we don't miss you. All right.
And Madam Chair, I do have an amendment, an author's amendment that I'd like to bring forward if I can.
Very good. Would you like to move your A1 author's amendment at this time?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the A1 author's amendment, and simply to describe this to members, this would amend the definition of provider under the Child Care Assistance Program to simply allow military child care programs that are not licensed by the state, but we know have high measures of quality, and they certainly are certainly regulated and overseen, to allow them to receive CCAP. This will allow our military families, probably a pretty small number per year, but our military families who are eligible for CCAP, that then they would be able to use this funding at the most convenient location for their families, which may well be a military program. I want to make sure that they have that option. And so that's what this author's amendment would do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A worthy amendment, to be sure, making sure we're supporting our Minnesota military families. Members, are there any questions on the A1 author's amendment? Seeing no further questions, Chair Pinto renews his motion that the A1 amendment be added to House File 4374. Are there any questions on this motion? If not, will the clerk please take the roll on the motion to adopt the A1 author's amendment?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Chair,
with your permission, as we've done voice votes on the other one, on the other ones, I'm just fine with doing a voice vote on this as well.
That works for me. So if members, you would unmute yourself, and those who are in favor of adopting the A1 author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Very good. Are there any further questions or discussion on the bill as amended? Seeing none at this time, Chair Pinto, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to say we spoke on that first bill about the fact that the fiscal picture is very different and that we don't know where a lot of things are going to go. We're awaiting a forecast, et cetera, et cetera. And so regarding spending additional state dollars, we, of course, need to be very careful at this time. this is one change that I hope that we can all be committed to making. It's something that will not have a state cost in the next couple of years, and I don't think we'll, in fact, have a state cost even in that third year, based on everything we know about CCDBG funding. This is something that we have got to do, and it is, in my view, crazy that we would have a lot of federal money sitting in a bank account ready to be spent on childcare in our state when there's a crisis. And we know there's this penalty coming, et cetera, and that we would not make this change. So members, I hope that we can, as this move forward, that we can do this together, regardless of anything else that we do, but that we would establish this as a bare minimum of something we would do. Thanks. And Madam Chair, I do see that Representative Franson has a comment to make sure we bring her in.
Very good. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and Representative Pinto. Yeah, I know where you're coming from. And I just, you know, never let a crisis go to waste, right? And yes, right now, I mean, providers are a little stressed out because parents aren't there, numbers are down, grant program money is gone. But also we have to remember fraudsters do not stop frauding public programs just because there is a pandemic. And so even now, we need to make sure that integrity is in those programs. So Mr. Chair, going forward, I think my members would feel a lot better if we for sure certainly had some assurances in those bills that our tax dollars, your tax dollars, everyone's tax dollars is spent properly. You know, previously millions and millions have been frauded or mismanaged in the state of Minnesota. And trust me, now when we are dealing with this and this uncertainty of our budget, those numbers that we don't have anymore, those missing dollars, if you will, voters will remember this. And so we need to make sure that we are instilling confidence in the taxpayer that we're going to do it right. And that's the end of my little speech there. I've had some coffee now.
Thank you, Representative Franson, and your French press looks delicious. yes, I completely agree with you. I think that we do need to make sure that we are doing our due diligence. And I think if we can remember way back to the start of the session, though it feels like much longer ago than it actually was, I think that the work that we did last year as a committee and the work that the Health and Human Services Division has done to ensure some of the changes within this child care assistance program really, I think, has gone a long way to build confidence back in the program. But thank you for your point. And Mr. Chair, do you have any further response?
Yeah, no, and Madam Chair, thank you for pointing out that first hearing that we had. I feel like there was a good sense among members, this is in mid-February, whatever that was, of hearing the report about all the changes that we made last year and how they've been implemented and how well they've been implemented. I guess I'll just add on as well that that whether we pay providers a really, 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 really low rate based on the 25th percentile of the 2011 rates, or a slightly less low rate based on the 25th percentile of current rates, that's not going to do anything either way. I mean, either way, we are spending money on the program. The question is, are we paying providers slightly less badly than, you know, based on these rates? So I guess my feeling is we need to do these things in parallel at the same time. And looks like Representative Franson has a response as well. Make sure to note
that. Representative Franson, follow up.
Right. So with that said, whether or not we pay them a really low rate or a slightly lower rate, we can say that regarding fraud as well. Whether they fraud a lower rate or a much lower rate, right? So if this program integrity doesn't take off, what I'm trying to get at is the fraud dollars are going to be more because of the increase in the rate, okay? And yes, regarding that hearing where we saw the lovely chart, that's all we have to go on. We don't actually have concrete data like these are the fraudsters we caught or this is how much we've stopped or recaptured. So we're just going off of a new program, if you will, with really no data yet because it was so new, remember, to back that up. So that's all I have. I know that you are doing the best that you can in the circumstances we are in, and I appreciate every one of you.
Thank you, Representative Franson. Mr. Chair?
Well, yeah, just thank you, Representative Franson. And what I'm actually going to do is ask the committee administrator to send out after the hearing to our listserv as well that handout from the first day, just to remind, at least remind members of the public. And as you said, Representative Franson, it is relatively early days in a way in the implementation of those, because we really did a lot last year in terms of program integrity. But to remind members of the public and ourselves, too, about the long list of changes that have been made since last year, and at least that first look at it. So it'll be a good reminder to all of us. So we'll make sure to send that out. And then I know this will be an ongoing conversation. Madam Chair, nothing further from me. And I really am grateful to the members for your work on this. And let's keep at it together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, any further discussion? All right. With that, Chair Pinto renews his motion that House File 4374, as amended, be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. We will take a voice vote if there aren't any further questions. Members, if you would unmute yourself. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. The motion prevails, and House File 4374, as amended, is recommended for re-referral to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. And with that, I will return the virtual gavel back to Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, very much. And so the final item on our agenda today is House File 3678, this is Representative Bonner's bill. And so, Representative Bonner, would you like to move your bill to be recommended for placement on the General Register?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 3678 be recommended for placement on the General Register.
Okay, great. So, Representative Bonner, please present your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. I'm honored, of course, to be here today to represent House File 3678. I'll provide a little bit of much needed context to provide background and then explain in more depth what the bill does. Please note at the outset, members, that this bill has no fiscal note and there is no additional state funds that are required. In essence, the bill extends deadlines for completion of an early childhood study, and it allows the participants to receive a monthly cash gift, which serves over and above as an additional form of aid to young families. The study itself is funded through a private partnership with philanthropic donors, which have donated approximately $2 million to this study, but it does not require any state funds to administer. That said, its companion, Senate File 3578, being carried by Senator Marty, is being spearheaded through the work of our GOP colleague, Senator Abler, in the other chamber. Now, a little bit about that context. In this committee, we've heard a great deal about the incredible amount of brain development that happens in the baby's first years of life and the amazing potential that that has on a child's future. We've also discussed in great depth the reality faced by many low-income families who struggle to meet the needs of those little ones, from their physical needs like food, clothing, and diapers, to challenges to meet the emotional needs provided by warm, responsive interactions with parents, and because they are often forced to spend more time at work to meet the basic needs and have difficulty finding high quality child care to foster that early learning development for a brighter future. More often, we also discuss this concept of opportunity gaps in achievements as these kiddos grow. But all too often, of course, we fail to act. Today, you're going to hear from my testifier a little bit about this remarkable study conducted through the National Institute of Health. It begins to take a real hard look at the effect of poverty on childhood and brain development for those babies' first tender years, or in this case, more specifically, the potential impact that a small amount of basic economic support can play in the life of developing these kiddos and their families. The study examines the interactions between parent and child, brain development, and development outcomes for these children.
The study is also conducted with rigorous standards through the National Institute of Health, which accepts only the top 10% of research applications. It is supported by experts in the fields of economics, neuroscience, child development, and pediatrics. Funding for the study, once again, is paid for through private partnerships and philanthropic organizations. Now, that stage set, we'll get to the heart of the matter on today's bill and precisely what it does. In essence, the bill before you today nearly grants an extension of an exemption of income for participating families so that families who participate in the study are not penalized. It does this in two ways. First, the bill prohibits the commissioner from counting the monthly cash gift received by participating families as one, income or assets to for the purpose of determining or redetermining eligibility for child care assistance under Minnesota Statute Chapter 119B, or MFIP under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 256J. And it also prohibits the commissioner from counting these monthly cash gifts as income for the purposes of determining eligibility for medical assistance under Minnesota Statute 256B and Minnesota Care under Minnesota Statute 256L. The prohibitions here would expire in January 1 of 2022 at the completion of the study. The second thing that this bill does is that it suggests that the commissioner must report to the legislature on the progress and outcomes of the baby's first year study by January 1st of 2023. And with that, I do have with me today Dr. Catherine Magnuson, who is an expert on social and behavioral science at the University of Minnesota. She is also the director of the Institute for Poverty Research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which is the longest federally funded poverty research center. With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifier, Dr. Magnuson.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Before you do, I just want to make sure you were describing the bill. My understanding, I just want to make sure we're clear on this, that my understanding is that what the bill does is it the changes you described in terms of counting income, et cetera, are already in law. And all this does is delays the implementation date by 4 years. It delays the essentially the report or extends the project by 4 more years. Am I right about that? That it doesn't make those other changes, Representative Bonner?
Actually, Mr. Chair, it extends it by 2 years to January 1st of 2022. But yes, you are correct. Essentially, we are not changing anything in existing statute. We are merely extending the end date of the current statute that allows us families to receive this money without harming their eligibility for state programs.
Okay. Okay. Good. We'll continue to look at that. And Dr. Magnuson, and I should note that Representative West has joined us. Thank you so much. And so, if we can have our testifier please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi. This is Catherine Magnuson. Thank you, Representative Pinto and Representative Bonner, for allowing me to take a few minutes of your very busy time to talk about our study. I am one of the lead researchers on this project, and this has been a project that's been going on, at least in the planning stages, for quite a long time, and we're about a little less than halfway through it. And the reason that we're coming to you is to ask for just merely this extension. My colleagues and I got together, as I said, several years ago, with the goal of really trying to better understand how early childhood intersects with poverty, and low income in families, to better understand whether providing cash supports to families would improve children's health and development through improving their family functioning. It seems like there's a lot of evidence out there that people draw on, but we as scientists also knew that it wasn't the most rigorous evidence that we could produce, and that the best way to study the problem was to create a new study that would actually test very rigorously whether these cash supports could improve children's functioning and do so in a way that was really taking advantage of the most cutting edge neuroscience. With this intent, we launched a study in 4 different sites, one of them being the Twin Cities. We worked closely with state government at that time with researchers in the local area. So we're working with Dr. Michael Georgioff at the University of Minnesota. He's a faculty member in pediatrics there, quite esteemed one, in fact, to plan this study. And we are now, we have recruited about 124 mother-infant pairs in the Twin City area. We did that between 2018 and 2019. And we're almost done with our 1 year data collection. So we don't yet have results to share, but the study is ongoing. And our request for extending this is that it took us a little bit longer to launch the study than we had hoped. In large part, it turns out that getting, we recruited out of hospitals when women are at the point of giving birth. And getting into hospitals, as it should be, is a complicated process going through institutional research boards, background checks, and a whole number of other important sets of paperwork. So it took us longer to get up and running, but the study is ongoing. The mothers are receiving money. We have two groups that we're going to compare in an experiment at the end. One group gets $20 a month loaded on a debit card, and the other group gets $333 a month loaded on a debit card. And that amounts to about $4,000 a year if you're not super quick with the math. Those payments are intended to run for 40 months. And our hope and our intent has always been to study not the substitute of cash for benefits, but the additional economic supports above and beyond whatever set of basic cash, or not cash, but public benefits that people are receiving. So for the integrity of our study, it's very important that they don't lose some SNAP benefits or lose MFIT benefits along the way, because we don't want to just test, is it better to have cash than to have SNAP or MFIT. I'll stop there. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have that might help clarify what it is we're doing or what this bill might be doing.
Thank you, Professor Magnuson. And I've taken a look and just want to confirm that that the study is in force right now, right? And this would delay the expiration date to, as listed in the bill, at 2026 and 2027. Representative Bonner, looks like you, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I did misspeak. The original date was 2022, but it does extend it, which is 2 years from now, but the bill will actually extend it to 4 years. So thank you for that clarification, yes.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Pryor has a question. Representative Pryor.
All right, I have two questions. And I guess to the bill at hand and the point at hand. So just to clarify that we need to extend it. So then I'm making the assumption that it took longer perhaps to enroll, or there is something that has come up or came up that said the original dates needed to be extended. And I guess this is to the bill author or to the or to our testifier.
Dr. Magnuson.
Sure, yes, we were late in starting to recruit. It took longer to get up and running, in particular to get into the hospitals themselves. There was a lot of months of work in terms of meeting with institutional review boards to make sure that all of our protocols were safe, extensive, appropriate, but very extensive background checks. And then as people who know well our federal government, there are also some just delays in terms of getting the NIH money actually out the door to us. So yes, there were delays in our start, so everything shifted in terms of a later start date. It was great that we had been proactive and gotten this legislation on the books so we could have started when we were, earlier if we were able to do so. But we're really just, shifting the timeline later because it was a slow start for us. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you. And I'm glad to hear that and now have a better and fuller understanding of the critical need for moving on this piece of legislation. Thank you. And then this is a question that, just out of my own curiosity and not relevant to the bill, but you are now in the middle of something that was not this what it was when it began. And if the committee can indulge us just to hear about how you're adapting to Yes, thank you.
Dr. Magnuson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pinto. I will say we've had to change our, as any ongoing study would, we've had to change some of our data collection plans. So we initially had plans to go out and interview people in person. We've had to move all of that to remote phone type of interviewing. We are coming up with alternative plans. We're hoping, I say this carefully, the timing could be worse for us, frankly. We're hoping that the mothers are now finishing their one-year data collection plans. We've moved all of that to just phone surveys for now until we hopefully at some point we'll be able to go back to in-person interviews. At the same time, the most important assessment for our study doesn't come until the children are three. So we still have 2 years by which we hope things will be in better shape and we'll be able to get in-person assessments of children's development and particularly their brain development. So we have plans to do extensive assessments at that point. So this is a horrible event. And our families that we do here, our families are really struggling. We have a qualitative study where we have conversations with families. And yes, times are very, very difficult for many families at this moment. This is the only source of income that they have coming in, particularly down in Louisiana. Some families up in Minnesota, where we're also doing a qualitative study, have additional benefits that they're drawing down on. And for that study, we're working also with local folks. The Future Services Institute at the University of Minnesota is helping with our qualitative. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Representative Pryor, anything further?
No, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Dr. Magnuson, for discussing that. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have more of a comment, I guess, than a question. I want to thank Representative Bonner for carrying this bill and Dr. Magnuson for this just really incredible work. This is a very important study, both for early childhood development and families and really for society at large. I mean, this could provide such critical information about how we can impact poverty. So key to finish this study. I mean, you've already put the work in. Let's get the results. This could be transformative. So just a thank you, and I urge everyone to support.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Morrison. Representative Heintzman.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, can you please have someone explain? I don't mean to be insensitive, but I am curious, why are we working on something that currently has funding through 2022? And this is an issue that we're taking up now, and it just seems very odd to me.
And Representative Heintzman, my understanding, and I'm just confirming this, is that there is movement in the other body, and the thought is that if we can move something that's not that doesn't have the fiscal implication, and there's so my understanding of the three categories we're supposed to work on would be COVID-19, mission critical, and then this third category is things that are bipartisan, where there is general agreement and we can move. So we certainly wouldn't do this at the expense of something else. But we thought that we could, if we can get this moving, as my understanding is that it is on the other side and get this addressed, we should. But I certainly understand your point, Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I still think it's a little odd, but I understand what you're saying. It does seem as though there's a number of other things that are going on simultaneously for all of us. And there obviously is some kind of motivation to work on this now that I can't see clearly, but maybe there are others that do.
Well, and I'll have Dr. Magnuson comment on this. I mean, I guess maybe the more important point I should have gotten to first is I assume that for study purposes, it sure helps to have the knowledge that they can, in fact, do the full study rather than having the sense they're going to be cut off at 2022. I mean, Dr. Magnuson, can you – I probably should have – maybe should have led with that. Dr. Magnuson, can you just talk about the the benefit of having this addressed now as opposed to at a later date?
Yes, and we have, exactly. For us, it's simply peace of mind. We also have reporting requirements back to NIH, so we need to assure them that the study can continue as designed.
Yeah, I suppose that if you don't, if the study is can't continue as designed for some period of time, that can cause some real challenges today and the days going forward.
Correct. I'm very sensitive to the comment about timing. There is an incredible amount that everyone is dealing with. And so I appreciate this is an odd time to ask it. I would only add that I think a year from now, it will still be an odd time to ask it. But it is critical for our study.
Okay. Professor Heintzman, anything further on that?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other? I don't see other questions or discussion from other members. Anything else that there is? Okay. So Representative Bonner, we'll give you the last word as usual.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, I will also clarify that the extension does in fact go to 2026, with the report being due in 2027. My apologies for that earlier misspeaking. But I think that this is a really critical study that studies those formative years. It's essentially putting into practice a lot of the really critical things that we've talked about in this committee. And for that reason, I think it is could garner an incredible wealth of information that we could use to help inform our decisions going forward, as well as looking at ways in which we can be smart about how we use our dollars and where we put those dollars. So I personally am extremely excited about the study and excited to see what we will find coming out of this in a couple of years and how that can inform our decisions as lawmakers. With that said, I want to thank Dr. Magnuson for being here today and for her incredible work. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to re-refer this bill to be sent to the General Register.
And so thank you, Representative Bonner, and thank you for carrying this. I agree with your comments and those of Representative Morrison. This has really amazing potential to increase our knowledge base and thus improve our policymaking. So with that, Representative Bonner renews her motion to recommend House File 3678 be placed in the General Register. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? And so with that, the motion prevails. House File 3670 is recommended for placement on the General Register. Members, that concludes our business, and our meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, Dr. Magnuson, and thank you to members of the public. Take care.